Don't tell them. Go to my website and fill out a 25 field form so that you can buy my product. Just give them one really easy action. Reply yes to this email, click this link, schedule a meeting, whatever it is, make it easy for them to take the action that you want them to take.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one to self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is Kaya Glatt. Here's three facts that I think you should know about her. One, she has helped multi-million dollar brands craft a better, more effective message. Two, she is a speaker and trainer and the creator of three courses on branding and messaging. And three, she's also the mother of five kids ranging in age from 16 months to 15 years. Wow. I imagine at least you don't have to go far looking for a babysitter.
That's true.
Kaya, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thank you, George. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Delighted to be talking to you today. And one of the monikers or one of the messages that you talk about is the mad branding strategy. And does that mean that you're angry or just crazy?
Not angry and only mildly crazy. So I call it the MAD formula because that's an acronym for the market audience DNA, which are the three parts that go into the formula, and it's madly effective.
Market audience DNA. Well, market, of course, is intuitive. That makes sense. But then you talk about the audience, and what do you mean by the DNA? The DNA of the audience?
So when we talk about market, that's your competitors. So what's already out there, what everybody else is already doing, been there, done that. The audience is your audience who you're trying to sell to. The DNA is who you are as a brand. So what makes you awesome? The areas where you've innovated, the team that you've put together, that is sometimes one of your biggest uniques. So we dig down into all those things, and that's your brand DNA.
What sort of elements, what sort of molecules do we find in the DNA? What fits?
Okay, so I want to talk about the DNA, but I think before we go there, we should just back up into like, why are we doing this? Why do brands want to do all this research? Why do we want to discover our brand DNA, right? And the answer usually is because there's something that we want to achieve that we haven't been nailing until now. So we haven't been getting as many customers as we think we should have. Or we haven't been able to charge as much as we think we should be able to charge. And I see this all the time, especially with brands that say, this is nuts because our competitor is charging three times our prices and we're better than theirs. So why are they able to do that and we can't, right? And then we want to solve those problems. And that's where the MAD formula comes in. We're here to solve the problem using the MAD formula. So for example, figuring out how you can charge more for your services, the answer lies in the market, the audience, and the DNA. So the DNA part is what makes your brand unique, and that's going to be something different for every brand. So it might be your customer service, the way you do things, you know, more kindly, more generously, more expertly. Those are three things that I see a lot. It might be your actual product is unique. There's something that you have to bring to the market that's different than what everyone else has. So that brand DNA is something that you really need to flesh out and figure out what it is so that you can then project it to the world and explain to them why, for example, your prices are worth paying.
Kaya, I've seen a lot of companies that their message is something like this. We've been in business for X number of years. We provide good service and we have a guarantee. So what?
Right. And the truth is that all of those things are not bad, right? It's good that you've been in business for 20 plus years. It's good that you provide good service. It's good that you have a guarantee. I'm sure that helps people feel comfortable with the purchase decision because they know that there is a guarantee. But, you know, like the name of your podcast, your intended message is to tell the customer why they should buy from you. And when the customer hears, we've been around for 25 years, we have good service, we have a guarantee, those things are, number one, something they hear from everybody else as well. It's very rare that a message like that is truly unique. And number two, those things are hard to believe. They're not persuasive, right? So you've been around for 25 years, so what? Maybe you've been doing a terrible job for 25 years. So why should I care? We have good service. What does that even mean, right? I want to know how that's going to change my life, how that's going to make a difference, how that's going to solve a problem for me. And the guarantee, okay, but I don't even care about your guarantee because I don't know yet if I want your product. Once I know I want your product, if I hear there's a guarantee, that's cool. That's the icing on the cake. Awesome. I have no reason to say no, but it doesn't make a difference to me yet if I don't know that I want your product. And I think that's really like one of the biggest mistakes that brands make is just thinking that they can say whatever they want and it doesn't need to really be very meaningful at all. And somehow their customer is going to get it, that they are an industry leader, that they are truly experienced. They are not going to get it because you haven't said anything meaningful to them.
Industry leader. I've seen companies and organizations claim to be a leader or claim to be number one. And I'm leery because my first thought is, really? Prove it.
Exactly.
And when people say that, what could they be doing instead? Or what could they do to provide at least some context to that?
Okay. So first of all, if you're calling yourself an industry leader, and you really are, great. Good for you. You have, you know, you're a leader in your industry, meaning that you're better than a lot of other brands out there. What you can do is, first of all, make it very specific. Instead of saying we are an industry leader, say what specifically you are doing better than others. So if you're a shipping company, right, and you're an industry leader, instead of saying we're the leading shipping company, say we have 75% less delays than any other brand in this industry. And that right there just won my trust. Now I believe you. And now I actually care because I don't really care if you're a leader, but I do care that my shipment shouldn't be delayed. So making it specific makes it more credible and makes it more persuasive. So what you want to do is, number one, have a specific positioning statement for your leadership. So tell me exactly what makes you a leader in this industry. And number two, back it up. Have a fact or at least an anecdote or a case study that will back up that statement and make me believe it.
And so that might be that they won an industry award, or they were voted number one in a newspaper poll.
So those are great. Those are helpful. Those are little logos and emblems that you can display on your website. And you don't necessarily even have to say we're an industry leader. You can put your positioning statement, make it specific, make it about the customer and how you are going to help them solve a problem. And then right next to that statement, you have that little badge that shows that you won this award, and it kind of backs up your credibility as well. So it doesn't have to go down the path of saying we're an industry leader and the way that you know it is that we've won this award.
Words are I believe what convinces. It's not as much as we like images and photos, and they might help the message, but I think it comes down to the words. Would you agree with that?
So, George, that's such a good point. And a lot of the time, it really depends. When we're talking about a service business where there's going to be a human being who's delivering on, then the words, or in the case of, you know, if it's a website or an email, it's the copy that does the heavy lifting and the heavy selling. When we're talking about a physical product, right? Like if you're selling an iPhone or a hairbrush or whatever it is, any physical product, then the images are going to be equally important. And that's especially true for lifestyle brands, where you're trying to build an emotional connection, you're trying to attach a certain status to your product, right? So nobody needs a $1,000 handbag. So those images need to tell the story of why you want to buy this $1,000 handbag when you can get one for 10 bucks at Walmart. So in a service situation, yes, the words all the way. In a product where it's a physical product, then I think both the images and the words carry a lot of weight.
I'm going to stick with the words for now.
Yeah.
And the message that's written on the website, how might that differ from a message that's perhaps in an email? How are those different?
That's a great question. So whenever we talk about any kind of copy, it's always about who's in your audience. Now, on your website, there's a really diverse audience because anybody, anywhere could be landing on your website, where it might be a longtime client of yours. It might be an investor who's thinking about investing in your company. It might be a prospective employee. It might be a prospective client, right? All kinds of people are coming to your website, and each of them needs to find what they are looking for. So your website has to be built with multiple messages, or at the very least, one universal message that appeals to all of those audiences. With email, you have a lot more control. You are sending an email to an individual, and you know exactly who's going to be reading that email. And that's true. Even if you have an email list and you're blasting this to thousands of people, you can segment that list. So you know who's going to be reading. Is it going to be a director of marketing? Is it going to be a freelance copywriter? Is it going to be a business owner? And you can tailor your content to that one reader. So you have a lot more control over what kind of copy you're going to be putting in there. And you only have to focus on that one reader.
When you're sending that email and you're trying to connect with that one reader, how do you put them in your message?
So you make sure that your message is about them and not about you. Okay, so let's just make this more concrete. Let's come up with an example of something you might be emailing somebody about and how you would make it about them instead of about you. Okay. Let's say you have an opening in your business and you're reaching out to a colleague asking for a recommendation who can fill this position, right? So before you even write the email, don't write a single word. First, come up with a plan and think to yourself, why should this person want to help me with this? Why should they want to take this action, right? What will it do for them? What's in it for them? And sometimes the answer is really simple. In this case, well, it's a colleague of mine. They feel good about helping others. They'll want to help. All I need to do is make it very easy for them. Oh, so now that I know my job here is to just make this really easy for them, I'm going to make sure to put very specific details about exactly what role I'm looking to fill, exactly what qualifications the person needs, exactly what they should do in order to refer somebody. Should they reply to my email? Should they send them a link to an application page? Because all I need to do is make it really easy for my colleague and they'll be happy to help. So you see how we kind of like went through a process where I go outside of my own mind about what I want, right? And I enter into their world, and that gives me a lot more clarity about what needs to be done. They don't need persuading, but they do need me to help them not waste their time because they don't have time to be like, what kind of role are you looking for? What are the qualifications that you need? If they need to answer my email with all those questions, they're not going to bother. So just making it easy is what needs to be done in this situation.
And I admire that thought process that you just went through there, which is probably a good model for anyone to go through before they write anything to anybody, starting with, well, okay, here's what I want, but why would they do this? Why would they care? Well, because they know me and they care about me and they might want to help me. Okay, so what's going to be their concern? Well, they probably want it as easy as possible. So that thought process is something we don't normally put ourselves through. We just put our pen to paper or start typing away on our computer, and we just type out the first words that come to our mind about, I want, this is what I want, or here's what I got for you. Well, why would you care what I've got for you? So that's a powerful process. And when you sit down with your clients and you help them go through that process, do you start with those questions, or are there other questions that you also ask them to get them in the right mindset?
Absolutely. So we actually have this exercise, George, that we go through, where I have a table with columns. And we go through each of the services that they offer. And we say, okay, what's the name of the service? Who is it for? What problem does it fix? And you would be astounded at how many times that's the first time anyone's ever asked themselves that question about the services that they're trying to sell, right? So if you sell an audit, okay, what problem does the audit fix? And as soon as you ask that question, it's like a complete mindset shift, because suddenly, instead of you thinking in terms of, well, this is what I do, and this is how it works, and this is how hard I work to do it, and this is how many hours it takes me, and this is how much it costs, it becomes like, oh, okay, they have a problem, and the audit fixes that problem. It's just a complete paradigm shift, and it's the most important paradigm shift to go through before you invest in any marketing.
And I can't help but think, and tell me if this has happened to you, those phone calls from people selling duct cleaning. They're selling duct cleaning, but they don't approach why. And perhaps maybe they would be better off if they start saying, well, now you've got the furnace on. Have you noticed it's kind of dusty in the house? Or have you noticed people coughing? Or if they started with those kind of questions, people might go, yeah, you know, you're right. As opposed to, hi, you want to buy duct cleaning.
Exactly. I think of it as a service to humanity that you just say right off the bat who this service is for and who it's not for, right? So if you're not having that problem, you know you don't need duct cleaning and you're not wasting your time or our time. So it really is just a service to humanity to be very clear about what problem you solve and who you solve it for.
Kaya, what are some of the mistakes that you see companies making with their branding messaging?
Okay, so there's so many mistakes. We'll start with just a lack of clarity in their messaging, where you land on a website and you see it's all about innovative solutions and cutting edge technology. And within 5 seconds that you have somebody's attention, you lost them. Because they don't know innovative solutions for what? Solutions to what problem? Cutting edge technology, what about it is cutting edge? Those two phrases that I used just now are probably the most overused phrases in marketing. And the sad part, George, is that many times it's actually true. This brand really is very innovative and has astounding technology, but they're failing to communicate what the benefit of that is. And they're failing to communicate specifically what that technology does or what problem it solves. So that's one of the biggest mistakes I see. Another big mistake I see is having broad promises without any credibility to back it up. So saying things like, you will get a massive ROI, or we are going to transform your business, but then not earning my trust by telling me how you've ever done that before for a brand like mine. If you're telling me I'm going to have an ROI, I want to see case studies. I want to see stats where your clients had an ROI. And if I don't see that, I'm like, sounds nice. I don't believe you. People do not believe what they read unless there is that evidence to back it up. So I would say that's the other biggest mistake. And then lastly, I think this mistake happens with the most educated brands that have done a good job in their messaging, and they are telling a problem solution story, but they're missing the differentiation. So even though they've made it clear, let's say, for example, that I have a problem and I need duct cleaning, they haven't made it clear why I need them to do the duct cleaning. I can just walk away and be like, okay, I do need duct cleaning. Thanks for the reminder. I'll go with the other guy. You need to have a clear differentiator that tells me why that duct cleaner needs to be you.
Kaya, when you're promoting your services to prospective clients, how do you position yourself? How do you grab their attention?
Okay, so that's such a great question. Thank you, George. So we talk about the problem that my clients have, which is most often being a high-achieving B2B, right? You are doing an amazing job with the services that you offer, and you have many satisfied clients. But there's something missing in your messaging and marketing. So the world is not seeing who you really are and what's so excellent about you. And because of that underestimation, you're losing clients, you're falling behind the competitors, and you just feel like you're not reaching your potential. So what we do is, we go into that MAD formula. We figure out what it is your audience is really looking for. We figure out what that big differentiator is for you. And then we make sure to work out a really powerful message that tells your customer how you're going to solve the problem, earns their trust with credibility at many, many points in the website, not just like a section with testimonials on the bottom. Robust evidence that builds trust and a very clear differentiator that makes it sound like you are the one that can solve this problem. And it has to be you. It shouldn't be anyone else. It has to be you. And what happens when we do that is my client will send me screenshots that they get from prospects saying, oh my gosh, your website speaks exactly about the problem that we're going through now. And you know that the page is converting because it's following these formulas and this well-researched method where we're making sure to connect with the audience and what they're looking for.
Now, in that first statement that you made, you recognize their success, or you said you've achieved success, you've had some success, but there's something missing. And to me, that sounds like a phrase that would resonate with a lot of companies. Because there are many companies who have some success, but they want more. There's something missing. So I can see how that's going to resonate with people without giving any kind of BS.
Absolutely. And often what made them successful until now is that they invested a lot of effort into making their clients happy, into doing a really good job. And they maybe have not invested as much effort into their marketing and their messaging. But it comes to a point when they say, okay, we need to do this because if we want to serve more people and get the kind of clients that are the right fit for us, we need to have the right message so we can keep doing what we do.
How critical is it to describe their pain early in the message?
So the answer to that question, George, is a little nuanced because it really depends on the situation. How much you talk about the customer's pain or how early in the messaging is all going to be a strategic decision that you make based on the research that you've done. So I'll give you an example in the mental health field, right? If you are messaging for a mental health provider, you're not going to put a whole lot of agitation in there because the person knows that they are in pain, right? If the person is a substance abuser, we don't need to tell them you're wrecking your life and your family is being destroyed because of your behavior, right? That would be like really not a good decision to include in your messaging. So the amount of pain that you talk about and the amount of agitation that you do is always going to depend on who your audience is, what their level of awareness is, what they're ready to hear, and what's going to just push them into denial. We don't want to overdo it on the pain. We want to give them something to aspire to, something to desire. Like, let them envision how amazing things are going to be with this solution instead of just crawling into the little hole and saying, oh, I'm bad. I haven't done well until now. You know, I'm in a corner.
Okay. So we need to be sensitive to the audience in terms of the pain. When we're offering a solution, do we need to show them right up front that we have a solution from beginning to end, or do we simply need to paint a possible picture of where they could be?
Okay, that's an awesome question. So it depends. You want to include enough meaty detail about your solution to make it credible, right? I need to know that there is a process that's going to get me to these fabulous results. If I don't see that, I'm like, sounds nice, but you're not telling me how you're going to do it. So that's all just kind of like, what are you, a magician? I don't believe it, right? So you want to have enough meaty detail that I can read your process and see, oh, okay, this is how you do it. That makes sense. But not too much detail that I'm just like overwhelmed. I don't need to know every one of the five steps plus the sub steps to all of those five steps. That's going to be information overload for me, and it's going to turn me off because I'm like, this sounds like so much work. I don't want to go to 17 meetings, right? So I would boil it down to 3 to 5 key points in your process that you want to talk about, but not a lot more than that.
How important is it to have a phrase that pays, and how often should one repeat that?
It's a really good thing to have. It's a branded asset. So it's something that, you know, is associated with your brand that nobody else can say. If it's fun and memorable, then that helps a lot too. You don't want to repeat it multiple times in one communication. You can say it once, and after that, it becomes like your Dr. Seuss. It just becomes juvenile if you repeat your catchy phrase more than once. So save it for either your email signature or one time within each piece of communication, but not more than that. It's more important to be meaningful, to be real, to be communicative, to build trust, to tell the story. And that little catchy phrase is helpful, but don't overuse it.
If I'm going to write a prospecting email, how much time should I put into writing that email?
That's a really good question. It's hard to quantify how much time it's going to take you to go through this process, but I would tell you what the process should be. And however long that takes you, you'll kind of decide, is the payoff worthwhile for me to invest that much time? But the process is you take the time to get to know the person who you are reaching out to. So as much as possible, you do your detective work. You check out their social links. You check out their website. You check out if they have a podcast, what they talk about on their podcast. Try to find out what their pain points are. So if they're posting about some of the issues that they're experiencing, you read up on that. If they're on Reddit talking about, you know, asking questions, now you know what their questions are. And that's really the biggest, you know, investment of time on your part. Once you've done your research and you know about this person who you are reaching out to, that's when you go through that thinking process where you think, okay, what is it that I want them to do? And what's in it for them? What is it that they want that will make them want to take this action? And you share that information with them, and then you make it really easy for them to take action. So don't tell them, you know, go to my website and fill out a 25 field form so that you can buy my product. Just give them one really easy action. Reply yes to this email, click this link, schedule a meeting, whatever it is. Make it easy for them to take the action that you want them to take.
How can your message help qualify the prospect so that they can read it and they can go, oh, I can't afford them, or they're not for my kind of business? How can you clear, because there are some people you want to make it clear, I can't help you. How do you put that in the message without offending anyone?
So people actually do not like to have their time wasted. I personally find it more offensive if somebody wastes my time than if they tell me straight out, this is not for you. This is not a fit for you. So for example, if you are an automation guru and you only work with coaches, consultants, and creatives, you'll put that in the hero of your website. Like, let that be the first thing that people see. This is automation services for coaches, creatives, and consultants. And then if I don't fall into that category, I'll say, oh, okay, not for me. So if you serve a very specific vertical or industry, just say so. Make it clear right from the get-go so that others know that it's not for them. And if your prices are premium or are high-end, list them on your website. Have a starting at price so people can see, you know, this is not in budget for me, and they will appreciate the fact that you haven't wasted their time.
And I can I notice on your LinkedIn profile, you mentioned a little bit about pricing there, just to give people an idea, you know, can I work with you if you're a small organization? Yes. And here's what the fee range is going to be. Typically, however, though, it's going to be more like this. So people right off the bat can go, oh, okay, that's in my budget, or, ooh, can't do that. And so right off the bat, you save them time.
Exactly. I want to help you. I don't want you to waste my time. I don't want to waste your time. So I'll just tell you how much you can expect to pay for my services. And that way we'll both be happy.
Kaya, you've got some free resources on your site for people. Who will get the most of that?
So most of my resources are for marketers. I also have resources for entrepreneurs. So if you are thinking about marketing in any capacity, whether it's for your own business or because you are a marketer, you'll benefit from one of my free trainings or resources.
And you can find that link in the description below. Kaya, as we prepare to wrap up, if you could sit down with a business owner, a medium-sized business owner who's looking, reviewing their marketing plans for the next year, what questions would you have them ask themselves or maybe of their own marketing people to get things moving more in a more positive direction? What might be that one, two, or three questions you would suggest they ask?
I would say take a look at your biggest branded assets, whether that's your website, your company page on LinkedIn, or the brochure that you're using at trade shows. And take a look at that and say, is this a true representation of who we are? Does it give our customer strong, compelling, and credible reasons to choose us? Does it back up our claims with trust building data? So everything that we say is very believable. And is it a unique story that no one else can tell? If the answer to all of those things is yes, you're doing a fantastic job. If the answer to any of those things is no, you want to take a second look, do a revisit, maybe do an audit of your brand and make sure that your message is going to be more on target for all of your future efforts.
Good advice. My guest today is Kaya Glatt, reminding you that you start your message by thinking about the customer's why.
If you like what you heard, tell your friends and post your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, because that helps more listeners find us. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.